Catch the NBA playoffs on Sling TV, the most flexible live TV streaming service, putting consumers in control to watch games their way with flexible subscriptions. Want to catch one game or a full series on ESPN? Grab a 1, 3, or 7-day pass. If you want to catch as many games as possible, get a monthly subscription with our ABC, NBC, and ESPN combo package. Either way, Sling lets you watch the playoffs your way with no long-term contracts. Learn more at sling.com.
Today on The Grave Talks, haunted abandoned locations. From a young age, James Edward Garcia had a fascination with the paranormal. From witnessing his grandmother practicing Santeria to hearing voices and witnessing objects moving, the supernatural was a fact of life for James. As he grew older, James decided to take his interest and understanding of the undead to a new level by personally investigating and documenting locations that the living forgot. From the Queen Mary to the Hales Bar Dam to an abandoned asylum in Long Island, James has documented and investigated ghosts all over the country. He's also suffered oppression and attachments while visiting locations infested with spirits. What continues to draw James back to the physical homes of the dead?
Paranormal started, very young, and mostly, I want to say, influenced my grandmother, my mother's mother. She would tell me these stories from her own experiences, and she'd tell my brothers and sister as well, but there were times I was the only one hanging out. Let me just turn this off.
That was not an EVP for anyone playing along at home.
Yes, that was not a ghost phone ringing. But so she would tell the stories, and I was so fascinated. There was times it was just me. I would just hang out with her because I couldn't get enough of it. So she had these stories, a lot of it from Cuba. She was originally from China, but as a young kid, her father migrated over to Cuba. And so she grew up mostly there and witnessed things that these, like Santeria was a thing that was done there. Like it's almost these rituals to bring things into your life, you know, to get more money, to make the profit or whatever, make things, bring somebody into your life that you desire and make them fall in love with you. Almost like, I guess, the witchcraft in ways too.
Sure.
But they would use things that are religious type objects and stuff and do these rituals and sacrifice chickens and things. Anyway, so she saw that growing up as a kid in Cuba, the neighbors would do things like that, and she kind of learned some of it to a degree, but she had psychic abilities as well. So she was more the type that had what I call premonition type psychic abilities. And so she would, in her dreams, have dreams of something to be that would happen after. And she started to realize that as things from her dreams would happen. And so she told me those stories. And then she would also see things at times. But I'm thinking back, some of it was even in her dreams or premonitions, but would be in the house where she lived, where she sees somebody coming upstairs and stuff, and it would be somebody from the past, a family member. And I'd be, I'm living there at the time as a kid, and just thinking, I'm upstairs in a room, just looking out, peeking out the doors, are they going to come up the stairs? You know, and I'm waiting to hear the creaky sounds of footsteps and whatnot. And of course, the horror movies, when I started seeing some of those, anything that was anything to do with paranormal or just horror, I was fascinated by that. And I remember just building little models of like the Aurora model doll figures with the Frankenstein and werewolf mummy stuff. Just sit there and look at them. And so I have interest in the doll stuff too. And I ventures off into ventriloquism as well.
Okay.
So I have that side of me. But yeah, so I started to have things happen for me eventually because I was so much into paying attention for it, expecting it from the source of my grandmother. So I thought, well, this is what happens. You know, I didn't discredit it or doubt it. It's like, oh, that's rubbish. You're a kid. You're very influential that way. And not everybody pays attention, but I didn't. So I started to Bill's acute senses, heightened awareness, not realizing that's what I was doing because I was so interested in the paranormal or having some phenomena happen, that things started to happen for me and I would experience them.
So when you were having these things that would start to happen, go into some of those details of what was it like? What was going through your mind when things started to actually happen for you beyond just the thought of ghosts are real, they're out there, but they haven't happened to me yet. When things started happening, what was going on?
Well, I call it the adrenaline rush of fear would kick in. I just know that, you know, even as I'm older now, how that feels for me. But for then, as a kid, I was scared a lot of times, but I couldn't stop thinking about it. But I would have things like the one time that I really got scared was there was an object, I'm trying to remember what it was, on a shelf. And it was some kind of cardboard piece of something. It was a bunch of stuff. It was like a messy room. And I can't even remember what it was now, because I kind of let things go. But something fell off the shelf, and it was because I was sitting there, like, thinking about me controlling. It was like mind control, like, of an object, you know, a poltergeist, but me doing it, so to speak. I can make this thing come down if I really want to. And I would just – this is like magic in a way, but kind of phenomena that you control, not knowing that that's what it was. But I did have one thing fall off a shelf as I was looking at it. It took a long – I was there probably like at least an hour. That's what kind of concentration I put into it and attention. And it fell. I didn't, you know, I was looking at that as well as other things on the shelf. That thing fell off. There's no wind in the room. And I jumped and I got scared and I kind of ran out of the room. Not kind of, I did run out of the room. And just for a second, and I remember I was like a little hyperventilating, but there was nobody around to talk to. Mm-hmm. I mean, I lived at home with my parents and I have three siblings. They weren't home. There's times that could happen for any of us. And so I kept it to myself. But I know I must have told somebody. I just don't remember who. Because it's interesting that my past, there's a lot of things I've forgotten. Some people say, oh, you must have had a lot of trauma and you're growing up, then you just block things out. I don't know. It's possible. But certain things stick with me. That was one of them. Mm-hmm. There was a time I was at home, and I think at this point, it was with the whole family still in Florida, and somebody called out to me, you know, and who did I think it was? I think I thought it was my grandmother. That's what it was. It was my grandma. I said, oh, she's here, and she might have been staying with us. And so I didn't think nothing of it. I come out, and there's nobody around in the room. I was in the bathroom, that's what it was, and nobody was in the room. I go around, there's nobody in the house. I go, okay, who just called out to me? Mm-hmm. I thought that was strange, and nobody was home. So I thought, oh, okay, that was somebody else. That was, and so I didn't at that point say, who called out to me? Or, you know, I was just trying to understand it. Is this something that's real, that is would be considered phenomena, paranormal, and I didn't even know those terms at the time.
Yeah,
I would just think this is a ghost, you know. Then there was other stories of times when, let's see here, the big ones with my grandmother and my cousin at my cousin's house. Her father had passed away not too long back, and things were happening in the house, TVs turning on and off, and things falling down, being moved around. My grandmother was staying there with her at the time, and you know, to her this is normal, and she knew what she was the one who said it was him. It was Felipe, it's Sonny. It's him. He's back, and he needs to go, move on. So we were talking about it. Me, my grandmother, and my cousin sitting at a table, and there's a chandelier above us. And as we're talking about it, you know, things are starting to feel spooky, like something could happen at any moment. Usually you start getting the goosebumps and stuff. You know something's about to happen. And sure enough, the chandelier started moving. Pieces of it started coming off. I think it was plastic, but it was built in a way that you could take these little pieces off that dangle. And some started coming off. My cousin got hysterical, crying because my grandmother's yelling, pointing, and saying, you know, Sonny, stop it, go away. Thing's shaking. I get up on the table and I start grabbing it to stop it from moving while that's all happening. And I mean, it started moving in like circular motion and really started moving pretty fast. It was a little creepy. It's like definitely like a horror movie with thing with special effects kind of a thing almost. But that was a big deal. Later in life, I remember where this is one that not many people would believe, but I was actually doing some summoning. I was into spiritualism and studying some occult stuff and read a lot of the religions I could find. And so I was like wanting to bring some of this into my life, make things happen, like avatars or, you know, higher beings that are out there, angelic and all types of stuff. So I was doing some of that for every night. I would do it for practice that. And one night, the bed started shaking. I mean, the bed I'm on.
Yeah.
That seems almost impossible. And I still go back and think, was that a dream? Did that really happen? Because I told a few people, I kind of dismissed it. There's not a lot of people I would tell that to some family members. But I was alone, so I have nobody who was a witness. But yet it happened. And like that was the most, you know, spectacular thing that could happen, your fantastical thing that could ever happen to you in this physical world, I think. And it happened. And I stopped at that point trying to summon anything. That was the last thing I did.
I was going to say, did that end the venture into just trying to communicate in that fashion with the undead?
Yeah, eventually it became more pragmatic for me. I went from what I would call, you know, like flighty, cloudy, spiritual stuff. But, you know, at that time, too, I was very cleansed. I didn't even drink no alcohol. I don't even think I was drinking any coffee. I don't know if I was a vegetarian at that time, but I had really cut back on a lot of stuff. So I was trying to be clean, and that was part of the process of doing these kind of rituals, to be as clean as possible, and so your senses are much more clear. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that is stuff that. And, yeah, eventually, I actually put some of that away and didn't do as much of that anymore, but I was still into, like, horror movies and just the whole dark side. And not just dark in that I was into, like, devil worshiping or anything. I was never into that. To me, I even read what was considered the Satanic Bible just out of curiosity. I like to explore. And to me, I didn't do anything for me. I wasn't interested in getting into that stuff. I just wanted to know what it was about.
Sure. So eventually, obviously, you began to document some of your exploration into haunted locations on YouTube. Were you going out and exploring these locations by yourself prior to that, just out of curiosity, you know, prior to the days of being able to document such things on the internet?
Yeah, I had started to go to places that were considered haunted, go with a girlfriend or a cousin sometimes. I'm trying to think, at that point, I don't think I used to do anything by myself, but I would go with somebody and just experience things.
Sure.
And I would experience things. The person I was with would experience things. I remember doing something with a paranormal team in Casadega in Florida back, like, I guess it was either the late 90s or like 2000. And they had what was available equipment wise. They had the monitor security system stuff. Mm-hmm. We'd help them with setting it up. Like, wow, this is the way to do things. Oh, interesting. And then, you know, orbs were big because, you know, you're capturing orbs on cameras at that point, still footage and maybe even video, and not completely understanding that there's other ways, there's things involved with that, the factors of dust and bugs even, and
sure,
moisture. But I started to learn that as well at that time. So it started to make sense to me what this is all about technically, and things you could use to detect things with the EMF meters. I remember getting like the K2 eventually, and I think that was in St. Augustine. I got my first K2, and I used to go to St. Augustine a lot. My cousin lived there, so we had experiences at the lighthouse there way before the Ghost Hunter show. Sure. And, you know, but again, no cameras and stuff. We had, like, snap cameras, and, you know, we'd have to have the film developed.
So. Yeah. So when you began to investigate things and kind of started going down that road as, you know, probably initially kind of just as a hobby type thing, what were everybody, I think, at the beginning has, you know, some locations that you go, I really, at least some point, I want to go check out this place or that place. What were some of those places for you that initially you thought, I really want to get here and explore this for being a possible haunted location?
Yeah, so there's a place that I could say I went to and went back to. There's places I went to and would like to have gone back to and I didn't. But one I can say off the top of my head that I went to and did go back to and filmed was in Rhode Island at the General Stanton Inn.
Okay.
The General Stanton Inn was one of them. And so I did got to go back there, and I did it by myself. The owner allowed me to do it, which is great. So,
and what is the history of the General Stanton Inn?
Well, I remember from it, there was a General Stanton from the time of the Revolutionary War who owned a place in that part of Rhode Island, and he wanted to build his own house, a new house. And so it started with a piece of property. It was even much older, like early 1700s, that was used as a school/church where a lot of the Indian kids would be brought, American Indian, Native American, and converted to Christianity. And he wanted to take that as a part of the foundation for a place of his own. And he did. He moved it, and it's still there. And then built this plantation, but it's a mansion. But mm-hmm. ultimately an inn, because he kept on adding pieces, and they turned it into an inn. But he had his children, his wife, they grew up there. I'm trying to remember, two of the kids, I think, died on the property. Might have been typhoid fever, very popular, you know. Mm-hmm. Let me see. Was it typhoid fever back then? It was in the 1700s. I don't know. Typhoid
fever. One of the many in vogue death plagues that were going on.
One of those plagues that eventually technically called typhoid fever in the 1800s.
Yeah.
And so there is a family cemetery on the grounds, but he had some boys that grew up and they went on even to be involved in the military and whatnot. But so he was into converting, like I said, the Native Americans to Christianity, but he was also very patriotic. And I think during that time, George Washington at one point, who went all around the country, he actually did stop over at the General Stanton Inn, or whatever it was called at the time, mm-hmm. The General Stanton home. And I think, I don't know, it's not one of those that started off like a salt box kind of farmhouse thing. I don't know what they would have called it back then. But anyway, he was there. Different military had spent time there. And so it's got that history starting from Revolutionary War. Stayed in the Stanton family for, 200 years about. Most of its time was in the Stanton family. So up through even the Civil War times and whatnot, after that, a few families bought it. I think a total of 5 families lived there altogether, or lineage-wise. The last one was the one woman, the 5th owner of the place. She was in her 80s when I was there, and she had just taken it back. She had rented it out for different, I guess, management that wanted to use the facility. She was getting a little old. She ended up taking it back because they were not taking care of the place. And at that point, she was really looking to sell it when I went back the second time when I was by myself to investigate it and capture some really cool apparitions moving type of apparition in one place and doors closing and shadow movement figures and all types of things. It was great.
So when you captured the apparitions and you saw that, was that just captured on film or were you seeing that in real time with your eyes?
Oh, it was captured on film. I didn't see it in real time with my eyes. It was more, for me, I would just hear things, be voices or sounds and footsteps. I heard that and I did capture it. But now the visual part, if I did, I probably would have been a lot more creeped out because you're by yourself in a place. You start seeing that stuff. And it was creepy. I'm thinking back when I was there. Especially when you try to do it in the dark, when it's dark.
Sure.
I'm sneaking up in the attic where it was, had even some mannequin stuff up there and whatnot. And yeah, it was pretty creepy. And I didn't see it with my own eyes. I think some peripheral type things. I thought I saw something turn and nothing there kind of stuff.
What's going through your mind when you're going back and you're looking at your footage and you come across something like that where you see an apparition or you're hearing noises or voices that you may not have experienced in real time while you were there? Does it make you want to go and try and find more? Does it give you pause? How do you react to that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So when I see it and find something, I'm like, did I just see that? Or did I just hear that? Oh, that's something. And then, of course, I go back, I'm watching it or, you know, listening to it. And so I go right into the mode where I'm taking that moment, snapshot of that moment. Sometimes it's blatantly obvious. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, I cannot believe I caught this. And my heart's like beating. Some things are really creepy that, you know, just flat out, you know what it is. Mm-hmm. Like especially poltergeist stuff, but usually it's like I'm zooming in on the stuff. And it's like, is it that? And then when you see it, it's not. Oh, it's definitely not a car going by, or it's not this or that, whatever it may be. And you know, this is something I caught. You just get so consumed by it. You just spend your time getting to the heart of what that may be, or the voice thing, and enhancing it to you can really hear what's being said. And some of them are just incredible. And some are just okay, you know, but you know you got it.
Yeah.
It's still a phenomenon of some sort. You try to rule things out. I mean, I go through, and if it's not 100%, I can say this is rationalized out as this. I mean, you can say, okay, this could be a sound that came from the outside somehow. Even though you look outside, you'll see nothing around. But you say, okay, well, sound travels. It could still be that somehow, but you know, you don't have real proof of that. I don't want to just throw it away. Mm-hmm. And especially if it's something that it's clear enough, that's a voice and there's no other voices afterwards. I'm not going to throw that away. And if it really coincides with something that you know about the place or a person or something, you certainly want to keep that.
When you go in to investigate a location, the question I'm going to ask may have two different answers. There may have been an answer of what it was initially when you began to go in and document your investigations, and there may be an answer of what it is to you today. But was there initially a goal when you would go in and investigate a place? Some way to say, you know, to try and communicate, to try and help get a message across, or just to see if you can get anything at all. What is your goal today when you go in and investigate a location versus what it may have been when you started doing it several years ago?
Well, I could say that when I started really getting into the investigative side of it and the technical side, how you approach investigating, not paranormal activity, I did join, you know, paranormal groups, and I followed the 101 structure of paranormal investigating. Mm-hmm. But those groups we're leaning towards anybody who needs help out there. You know, we're experiencing this, help us. You know? And so that was part of what we did. And it's part of what I did. And I enjoyed helping come up some answers if I could. Sometimes it was psychological help, I felt, more than anything. But I was itching so much to do, you know, the captures were more important to me eventually. And it's like, that's more important to me. There's plenty of people out there who want to help people. And it's not like I'm turned away from that. I would still do it if I'm approached, depending on what the situation was.
Sure.
But today, that is not what I'm about. I'm more into capturing, so capturing evidence. I mean, there was a part of me, and still is there, the spiritual side, the spirit world. Is there life? The questioning, is there life after death? I want to know. Is it possible to communicate with someone who's passed on? That's all still there. But the thrill of capturing something unexplainable, an event that you can't rationalize 100%, is really strong for me. And I really want to document that on film or audio. Mm-hmm. It's like fishing, you know?
Yeah.
I used to fish with my dad, and the thrill of getting that bite and tugging, it starts, and then you're trying to reel it in, and you pull it up. It's that kind of a thing. So that's, I call that, when they say ghost hunting, that's ghost hunting to me.
Sure. Fishing is a good analogy, because I think sometimes people get into the thought of, you're trying to prove that ghosts exist. No, I think you and me, we're probably under the acceptance of they're out there. It's just a matter of, can we hear them? Can we do something to let them have their voice be heard? Just like fishing. The fish are out there. You may not see them right this second, but they're out there, and maybe we'll do something and let them be seen. Not that fish all that are excited about being seen by us, but I think at the same time, ghosts sometimes are not either, and sometimes we just happen to catch them, and there they are. Let's talk about some of the locations that you've investigated. I know we've touched on the one in Rhode Island, but I've just gone through some of your video series, and it's interesting. I like it because it's from a first person perspective. There's not a crew where, you know, five people are walking around and everyone, you know, pauses and goes, "Bro, did you hear that? Bro, did you hear this?" And it's, you know, somebody's, you know, Puma. It's just you and a camera, and you're wandering around locations that have activity in them. So I just want to establish that for the audience if they want to check out your YouTube channel, My Haunted Diary. One of the locations that I'm always drawn to, and I know that you have checked out, and I'd love to hear your experiences there, would be the Queen Mary. What happened there when you were wandering around the Queen Mary with your camera?
Yeah, so Queen Mary is a great one. I can say that place is definitely haunted. You will experience stuff if you're on the Queen Mary ship. Now, when I did it for 3 nights, but I did it with a group, so I wasn't alone. Mm-hmm. I think it was the third. There were times, I think the second night and the third night, where they're like, "Okay, this guy's the real deal. He's good at it. He's cut above everybody else here." And they said, "Go ahead." They let me go off on my own, which was great. So I do have those moments. I remember where I was in the engine room, in the boiler room, and all by myself, and got to experience it, you know, direct, you know, the creep factor and whatever is happening in there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, you got stuff communicating in there. It's engine room especially, but other areas. But you're hearing sounds. So you'll hear knocking and weird sounds, chains dangling and stuff down there, and you're trying to figure out where it's coming from.
Sure.
You know, like, "Oh, could you do that again?" kind of thing. And all of a sudden, it's doing it again. It's like, "Oh my God." And you're trying to find where it is, and it's dark down there. And it's just got weird vibes and weird sounds and feel to it. And yeah, I loved it.
What specifically were some of the experiences that you had, or were you able to document, while on the boat? We've gotten many stories over the years on both of our shows, from everyone from tour guides to tourists to even having the Commodore of the ship on this show, with all different accounts, ranging from extreme to, you know, fairly light, but nonetheless experiences.
Yeah, so definitely captured and using full spectrum, I captured an apparition on a still footage of what I think is a little girl. And so they see that little girl on the ship, and see, I'm already forgetting her names.
Sure.
But I did capture that in the pool area, which is the, I don't know what they call it, pool area two. I think there was like three different pools, one for the elite and the ones for the, you know, is the average person's allowed to use, and there's one for the poorer people or something.
Sure. It would have been first, second, and third class in the day of its sailing.
That's what it is. It's the class. Yep. The class. So on the second class pool, which is the one where their most activity mm-hmm. is captured, is where, and that girl is supposed to be, I did capture an apparition, a still footage figure of a little girl. I did capture voices in there, some of which was like a little girl's voice as well. And, oh yeah, I got a real creepy voice in an area that was off limits at that time because they said structurally there were some problems. It was the women's changing room in the pool area. Mm-hmm. And I did get to go in there. And I can't remember exactly now because it's been several years already. And I haven't looked back anymore and watched it. But it's probably in the third episode near the end where his creepy voice says something about being dead or something, yeah. being buried. I have to look back, but listen back on it. But it's there and it's captured. Pretty creepy place to be in, that whole pool area. Definitely the boiler room. I know you're going to say something, but the boiler room, I just want to mention it was an experience I had in there that was not of paranormal. I got locked in this section. The security guard didn't think I was down there or anybody, and I got locked in by a bolt and chain on this big, thick cell doors. That was very creepy until somebody came to rescue me, being stuck in there.
Being locked in the boiler room of the Queen Mary, that right there is a horror story to itself. When you pick up messages and things like that, where someone is referencing how they died or someone is referencing something of note, how do you handle that? I mean, do you think there's a purpose to getting messages like that or getting pieces of information to you like that? Do you think we as the recipients of those messages, whether it be in the Queen Mary or wherever it may be, do you think there's a duty with that information to do something with it, or is it just kind of there?
A lot of times I'm finding, you know, everybody's like, ask these questions, you know, what is it like to be in the afterworld, the astral plane, whatever it's called, after you die, what is it like? Tell us. What have you learned? We want to know. Yeah. You never ask those questions. Those are the more important questions. Yeah, I do. I did it many times. And a lot of times I don't get an answer for the most part. So I'm not going to just – I could put footage out there. It's like, what is it like – what was it like to pass on? Where are you now? What does it feel like? What's the experience? And just have nothing back. Sure. It's kind of – to me, I'm more, like you said, the ghost hunting part. That's the parts I'm going to show. I might be asking dumb questions possibly or being goofy, but something happened at that moment. That's what you're going to see. Now, is my duty to pass it on? I used to do that when we're trying to help somebody. We give them the evidence. Mm-hmm. I felt obligated to do so, but the stuff you get back for the most part, there's no big, strong, you know, somebody giving this wisdom that we can't get from ourselves, mm-hmm. the other side. And sometimes it's just really, they're just talking, just like we're talking, just regular conversation. It's just the fact that you got it. They may say something in reference as being dead or help me. Okay, that's interesting or cool, you know, or creepy, whatever. You know, they need help. They know they're maybe stuck somewhere. Maybe they're in some state of limbo land or purgatory, who knows? But you may not always hear that at the time. And if you do, and you say, how can I help you? And you get no response back, what are you going to do with that? And who do you go to with it?
Sure.
You know? So that's what is most part. Now, there was the Cecil Hotel where I did get that girl, Lisa Lamb, and she's clearly speaking and it's creepy. And there's people that have actually gone to, I think, the family of hers with my recordings. I mean, I was on television and in China or in Hong Kong, and I was supposed to be in Taiwan. They were very interested in her story because this is somebody from there that got killed here in the States, and they want answers and never got them.
That wraps up part one of our interview with James Edward Garcia. In part two, we'll ask, what are some of the most haunted areas James has ever visited? What kind of spirits did James find at the Hales Bar Dam? What's the darkest encounter James has ever experienced while on an investigation? After facing oppression, or possession experiences, does it ever give James pause to investigate the undead? What causes a person to become physically ill after encountering a dark spirit? What's the scariest encounter he's ever had with the living while investigating an abandoned location? And who did James encounter inside the Old South Pittsburgh Hospital? And were they living? Those stories and more in part two of our interview. Until next time for the Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.